Stockholm is a state of minds. We talking about the culture, so come and feel the vibe. You gon' have a good time. We helping you to see it. So much to do when living in Stockholm, Sweden. Yeah, yeah, let's go. Stockholm is a state of minds. Hey, Stockholm is a state of minds. Yeah, we break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast. Stockholm is where it's at. Let's go.
Welcome to Stockholm is a State of Minds, the only podcast you need to become Swedish. I'm Maria Fogelström.
And I'm Philip Rohr. And we're the hosts of this podcast, created for international people like you who have moved to Sweden so you can learn more about your new home country and make you feel more welcomed.
Sweden is craving for international talents to fill the gaps where the country doesn't have enough people with the right skills. However, the journey to land a job and to enter the Swedish labour market is not so easy. There are some obstacles to unlock and things you should know about the Swedish labour market to make the way smoother. To help us finding the keys, we have invited Lee Vermelin, who is a former chairman of the board of one of Sweden's largest unions for academics. Lee has a long and deep experience of both the Swedish labour market and also from international people in different ways. Welcome, Lee.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I do have an academic degree from Uppsala. I was brought up in Stockholm, so Uppsala was about 45 minutes on a train. So that was, you know, as far as I would go from Stockholm. So I studied economics and business. So that was a good 4 years and an amazing time to be part. Sorry, no, not studying, maybe partying a little bit as well. So that is what Uppsala is known for, a fantastic time in my life. But after that, I've been spending most of my career in sales, leadership. I've been to different companies. Kodak may or may not be remembered. Wasn't my fault. They went bust. And then on to companies like Accenture and other smaller players in the service industry. And also heading up organizations like Akavia, that you just talked about being one of the biggest unions in Sweden. So I have a different background. I've done a lot of things. I get bored if I do the same thing for too long, I think.
You're one of our fantastic faculty members in our five-week program with SDCN, and I was trying to introduce you to our group, and I think I just said you've done everything, so welcome, Lee. Because, yeah, you said sales, management, worked in the unions, no longer work in a union. So you also have very unique perspective.
Yeah. And maybe I can be brutally honest about a few things when I don't have to talk for 135,000 members.
Yeah. I think the first question I want to ask you is what is the Swedish labor market? And I know that's a broad question, but even just what do we put sort of different, I call them topics or buckets under the Swedish labor market. Are we talking the bureaucracy? Are we talking about business culture, laws, ideology? Like what are the different ingredients that make up the Swedish labor market?
Well, I haven't really thought about it that way. And I like the way you spoke when you talked about the labor market, because I haven't really thought about it in the way that you did. And, you know, in all honesty, I think maybe the reason we have a labor market in Sweden is because we have extremely strong unions. Mm. So there is, you're not a labor, you're not workforce, you are a market. And so probably something around there. And also, even if from my perspective, the labor market, well, that's where I spend most of my time. That's where I have my fun, if I'm lucky enough to have an interesting job. So the definition, maybe that's not, I haven't really thought so much about it, but it is, I mean, that's where most of us both have friends, meet possible family members. You know, it's a lot of our life in Sweden evolves around the work market or the workplace and so on. But if you define it, I'm sure there are, you know, we have the employers, the employees, the organization, how they work together. There are some things on the Swedish labor market that are a bit strange.
Okay.
Especially if you think about it from an international perspective. And that's why I quite like to be here in a very free role, where I can call it as I see it.
Mm.
I get an association now when you say that, because in the academy we have, I have a lecture about Swedish mentality. And there is actually an explanation why Swedes always talk about work or labor or jobs. And that is that for not that long ago, a majority of Swedish people were living in the countryside. They were farmers. And actually, the whole year was all about surviving the winter that was long and dark and hard. So during summer, you worked all the day, more or less, to get in the harvest. So there was no real time for pleasure or to sit in a cafe and discuss, how do you say?
Philosophy
or culture.
Meaning of life.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was survival. Yeah.
It was survival. So everything actually turned around work. Life was work. And still today, I think that Swedes are very keen on talking about work in all kind of situations. On a dinner, they often talk about work.
Yeah, we do.
We do. And I think maybe that's a historical background to this, why we call it labor market. All in the Swede's mind has always been and is job.
Mm. Well, you know, if you think, about it, because this is where I would like to start. First of all, I think we probably have the best, whatever you want to call it, labor market, I could say the best employers in the world. But I think it is actually a good balance between employers and employees, and that we have a fantastic work market in Sweden, or labor market. Yeah. And saying that, I mean, it comes back with a lot of people actually moving to Sweden to get a better work-life balance.
Mm. I moved back because of that.
Yeah, because I think from that perspective, we do not miss. Of course, there are going to be exceptions, but most employers, because they know we came from a situation where we don't have enough employees, they actually do see us as an asset, really something which is really important to them. It's not just something they're saying.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I think that, you know, we have a fantastic workplace. You can look after sick children, you get maternity, paternity leave. There's a lot of these things that are around that really do, you know, put us in a position where no one else is, because we also are treated very nicely. We are really someone the company depends on. Mm. And if I think about why that is, I still have to, you know, say that a lot of this comes back to the fact it's less than 100 years ago that we stopped shooting people on the Swedish labor market. You know, that might sound a bit harsh, but in 1931, that's actually what happened. And I think that was the starting point where we started doing other things here. We started collaborating, and you know, this has taken time. Mm. It's been a long and a strenuous journey. A lot of predecessors to me have worked so hard to get basic rights for the workers. But we have been extremely successful, probably because we are very consensus-driven. We want to work together, and also because somewhere along the way, we know that Sweden is a small, export-dependent country, which means that if we press or put too much economic pressure on our employers, they're not going to be around. So there is a balance where we can, you know, we sit down and negotiate. We have the least strike days in the world. And fair enough, strike days, that means losing money for the company, which means that you're actually losing money that could be paid out to you as a salary. So there are a lot of these things that it doesn't really make sense to have all of those conflicts. It's taken us almost 100 years, not really, maybe 80 years, and a lot of work. So from that, you know, I think that we are in a good situation, but there are things about this that makes it a little bit tricky for people to get in to the labor market. So Ooh. That's what I would like to talk to you about.
Yeah. Say more about that. What do you think is sort of what is tricky and why is it tricky maybe for internationals to enter the
Well, market? Just to be very clear on that, it's difficult for anyone to get in, even a Swede, you know, someone who's been living here for a long time. It is tricky because the work market in essence is built around the ones that are inside. Because remember, the unions have members. In Sweden, we have somewhere around 70, 75% membership in a union. So that's completely non-controversial.
Maybe you should explain here, Lee, about the unions in Sweden, mm-hmm. because many, when we meet international people, they sometimes, union, ooh.
Exactly.
They are creating strikes. They are not nice. So explain a bit how it works here.
And that's where we have to go back a little bit into history to see how we actually work together to create a better balance between employers and employees, like all over the world. But we have been very successful because together also, I guess, with the way that we've been running Sweden as a socialistic, democratic state, we have been putting up rules and regulations that are good for both parties. It's an interesting thing that most of the time, because we have a lot of strong laws in Sweden that are helping or guarding the employer, but you can see that sometimes that's actually counterproductive, because a law tends to be the floor. And for some of the relationship between employees and the very strong unions are that they want to negotiate. And if the law is there, it's actually easier for the employer to stick to the floor rather than actually negotiate. So it's and this has been going on for such a long time that we actually have discussions. Some of it becomes law and then we move on and then we get more rights and so on. So, and we are, the unions in Sweden are very powerful, not because they go out and say, we're going to have a strike or we're going to try to make the employers look bad and something like that. It's more to do with the fact that we sit down and negotiate, and we also know that what is good for the employer and the employee is also good for Sweden.
I think often in Sweden, the collective goes before the individual.
Yes.
In a job interview, the very final interview can be with a future colleagues rather than with a managing director.
Yep.
So same thing here, that can you say that a union is negotiating for all of us instead of just for one individual? Mm. You never have to take that discussion yourself. You can trust on your union that they take care of your interests.
Well, yeah, well, you can. I think you can trust them to make sure that most of the employers really want to behave well.
Yeah.
And so we've kind of gotten so far. So sometimes we forget about the struggles we had to get here. So we are seeing a decline in young people and other people, leaving the unions because they don't think they need us in case they actually have a problem with their employee. And in a way, that's not really, really fair. I've been paying, to this organization since I left university, and I'm actually financing the a very healthy work market because we all ship in and we have this balance in power. So it's very seldom that, at least not criminal employers, most employers are really, really good. Mm. So that's where I think it's a little bit different than to other places. And we also, what you'll see is that what has happened, it's kind of interesting because we have really low salaries in Sweden.
Mm.
And that's another interesting thing if you're coming from maybe a country like the US or a situation where actually being well paid in companies because you have an education in other countries. And you come to Sweden and realize that we're not very well paid here. And just to stay on that for a little bit, I think to understand why that is, we need to go back also to history. God, this is a history lesson, isn't it? But if you think about it, Sweden, most of the things that we really need is taken care of by taxes. I don't pay for my education. I don't pay for my kids' education. I don't pay for my health care. I don't pay for my parents going to a nursing home. I don't pay for my health care and all of those things. So we are, I tend to call us the low-risk people. Mm. Mm-hmm. We're not used to taking risks because we are very comfortably looked after. And that, of course, means that we don't have to have a lot of money in the bank in case someone in the family gets sick.
Mm.
So I think can you see how that actually, you're from the US, but I get this feeling that this means that we are we are comfortably looked after. It does things to us, like we don't really want to take risk. Maria, what is your...
Well, I think, first of all, it's very true when you say it. I mean, I take advantage of this and I'm a Swedish citizen, I work here. But when you explain it like this, I really feel grateful. But I think maybe also there is a lack of communication to the people here. I don't think many Swedes are aware of what they actually get. That's one thing I think when you say it. Another thing I think is that since we are so taken care of, don't you think it's also a risk of that the people get kind of passive? Because I can see that sometimes when things are really, really wrong. Like, for example, we have not enough staff in our hospitals. And I think it's really time for people to go out on the streets and protesting, saying we can't keep on going like this. We need to do something here. But we are trusting our other someone else will negotiate this. So I think that is maybe the negative side of this fantastic system, that it could actually be misused in one way, or it's people getting passive. They don't have to fight for anything.
And Maria, you are spot on, I think, because what happens with when you're passive, and we know this from research, that we have low mobility on the Swedish work market.
Yes.
So we tend to stay longer. We, especially when we get a little bit older, we stick to where we are. We don't move around the same way as you do perhaps in other countries. However, okay, part of that is because we don't have to worry about being fired.
Yeah.
You can actually fire. It's not as that difficult to get rid of someone in the Swedish work market as people think, which is probably a good idea because that makes us, you know, we are a good workforce because we don't have to worry about saying the wrong thing and being thrown out. So we can actually, with this Swedish kind of management, we are expected to speak up. We are expected to maybe even if you're young and new, you can say, you know, why do we do it like this? And shouldn't we be doing it like this instead? So it is a fantastic way to have workforce that actually adds a lot of value. Mm. But yes, we tend to stick around for a very long time because of this thing that we're not really risk adverse. And the only time we actually really get a good increase in salary is when we move to another employer.
Yes.
So yes, there are things happening in this. And I think part of that is because we have this really this setup with the Swedish labor market, with the unions and the employers, you know, they work very nicely together. And sometimes that actually gives us side effects that, you know, for instance, if you're trying to get into the labor market, to get your first job, to get your first whatever practice or you know, that's difficult.
Yes.
So the thing here is also because our very suppressed or you know, compressed wages or salaries is that, you know, if I am an employer and I want to hire someone, you know, I will pay almost the same amount of money for someone without education as I will do for an engineer.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this, what happens here is that, and we have to also remind us that, as you said, Swedes don't really know about all these things that we get, but we don't even know that, you know, if I get 100 crowns from my employer, they actually have to pay 150 crowns because there are a lot of other, you know, social services that they have to pay. So it is expensive for the employer to have employees. And of course, because we talked about this with the group that, you know, could you have a start? Could you come in as a secretary? Could you come in as a, you know, as a assistant and do these things? And unfortunately, it is almost as expensive to hire someone on that level as on a higher level. So we don't really have a lot of those jobs going around, but you can start. And I think that's one of the bad effects, because we get people to work their butts off. Because we don't have people to support.
I had some questions to you about, we haven't talked about it really with that term, but you sometimes refer to the Swedish model.
Yes, the Swedish model.
What is that?
She's laughing. I think I headed up that union for a few years before I actually understood what it was.
Yes.
It's something that we all refer to. It's something that we very much respect. But it is, in essence, it is the situation where we negotiate rather than fight. Okay. Mm. So, for instance, the core of the Swedish model is that the ones that run the export industry, they sit together with the employer organizations, and then they say, you know, we look at the macroeconomical and what's happening in the world. We think that we have a chance to, we can afford 3% salary increases this year. And then the employer says, no, 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 you need to make us 4. And then they say, no, we can't. And then they keep going that, and then they land at 3.5. Okay? That's a huge salary increase. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. But this model has been in place since 1997. It's called Industriavtalet, the industrial agreement. So what that means is, because before that, we actually had the governmental sector pulling higher or making the wages higher and higher and higher because they didn't get enough skilled people. So what happened was that we didn't have the export sector to bring up the fresh money that we can pay the government. You know, you can see how that works. We need to have export money because that's actually the only real money that is. So by doing this, we say that this is because we are dependent upon the export industry. And that means that we get really low, very incremental salary levels, but they are real. They're not being consumed by inflation. So since 1997 up until when the inflation rose a year and a half ago, we had actually 70% in increased purchasing power on having 2.5-3%. So this is what is you know, broadly referred to as the Swedish model. We negotiate, we keep the salaries compressed. And if you think about it, when the inflation started to rise, and you have to pay a lot more for tomatoes and cucumbers and for electricity and so on. I mean, if you compare the amount of money that comes from the work market, if we would have raised our salaries with 15-20%, then we would be chasing our own tail in the inflation spiral. Mm. So by actually having strong unions, we managed, because my members weren't really happy about that. But we can say, we know this, we need to do this, because it's going to hurt us for a few years, but we're going to get back to where we want to be.
Isn't it also that politicians don't get into
about that. Yeah, they are completely non-visible when it comes to the work market. Stay away from the work market.
Yes, I think that's
unique. We are the unions and we are the employers and we deal with this. So it's kind of interesting how I forgot about that, because when we were heading up the unions, I mean, the politicians are really important, but a lot of the power, if you think about it, a lot of the power are in hands of those that have to live there for the rest of their life. Mm. We only vote every fourth year, but we go to our jobs 8 hours a day for 5 days a week. I always like to say that I think I started saying that we have a really fantastic workplace in Sweden. We have empowered employees. Mm. We don't treat employees like shit. There are always going to be exceptions around. But I think that's something carrying with us, that we, through the unions, through the way we've been having the Swedish model, it is actually a fairly good balance between me as a person and my employer. And that is a huge difference. They have all the resource and I'm just a person. Mm. But by having these strong unions, we actually level that field. And that makes so much, because most of us actually like to go to the job, to our jobs. We feel that fulfilled. We get, education. It's a lot of those things that are attached to having a job. And of course, we've had so many of the women being in the workforce for such a long time. And that's why we have free health, childcare and all of those things. So, yeah, it all comes together somewhere.
Mm. Yeah. Lee, one thing that we hear often from international talent is that they get the response from an organization that they're overqualified for a role. Can you speak a little bit to maybe why that is and tips you'd have?
Well, I think you have to remember, we talked about Swedish being, consensus driven. We don't like conflicts and so on. So this is probably just a very non-problematic way of letting you down, because we don't want to hurt your feelings. Mm. I would, even my Swedish friends get that all the time. You have to look in what it could be, if you are too old, because we have a lot of age discrimination, or if they think you're too expensive. There are these things, but mostly I think we go back to the fact that they are they're risk minimizing. And this is just a way, a nice way to let you down. So don't start changing your CV. Don't start, you know, making yourself look less interesting or less educated, because that is not the basis here. But how do you get in? We've been avoiding that topic, haven't we?
No, but yes.
You have to become a bit Swedish first, I think. You have to think like a Swede. You have to learn how the system works to get in. Don't you think so?
Yep, I think that's probably a good place to start, because if you approach it like you did in your home market, you probably will have problems getting in. And we talk about Sweden being a small country, a very network country. We like to have references. I think that go back to, but like you were saying, history when we were farmers. Mm. You know, we used to know the people that lived around us and so on. So we tend to be like networked and tightly knit. However, I've been recommending a lot of people to jobs throughout my career, and that has never given them. They never gave them the job, but they gave them the opportunity to show who they are and that they should have the job.
Mm. Yeah, because I think it might be easy to hear, oh, it's about network. You can quickly hear that and say, oh, well, is it corrupt? Is it just who you know? But you're saying that actually it's more opening a door for someone, and then they need to walk through it and present themselves.
Mm. I think a common mistake that when we look at companies recruiting people, of course, there are, you know, some of them that have, they recruit 20 academics every year and so on. But if you think about it, if you are an employer and someone quits or you need to fill a position, it's not like you're actually recruiting. You are fixing a problem.
Mm. Mm.
And a problem is often painful when it comes to time. So, of course, not all jobs, but some of them are going to be like, oh, God, I need someone to do this or to help us with this. Or, how do we find someone? And we need to be, that person need to start last week. OK,
mm-hmm.
That is a common situation when you recruit, you fix a problem. And of course, if you ask around and you get a few candidates and you look into them and they're actually, all of them are, you know, decent, you will pick the best one. So a lot of the recruitments are not being out there posted, or they're actually being filled. And I think we say about 8 out of 10 jobs, they find their candidate through a network.
Yeah.
But it's not corrupt in that sense. It's more to say, okay, you know, remember me, I'm here, I'm looking for a job. Within the next year, I'd like to transition from the job I have and so on. So it's actually a quite efficient way to do it.
Yeah, I was saying that when you say explain it like this, I feel that it's not at all bureaucratic. It's actually working between people. So it's a between people thing to get a job, which should make it easier once you have understood the system.
Yes.
And this I think is it's key. Interesting what you say too. You have, it's like fixing a problem for the company, which means that we teach that in the academy too, that you as a potential employed should make your homework and really look up, what can I do for this company? How can I be a solution for their problem? Mm. And that's a good way of selling yourself into a company rather than just showing your CV. What do you think about that?
That's perfectly right.
Mm.
And you also need to remember that from... the way we organize our school in Sweden is that we fairly early on decide whether we're going to be an engineer and someone studying economics, social sciences, a doctor or a lawyer, for university. And this means that we are very, very bad at coming up with, oh, you're a geological anthropologist. Well, you would probably have an interesting career in Mankopi. That doesn't happen.
No.
We are very boxed into that. So, and this is the good thing about that, though, is that because if you get a foot in the door and you can show that that foot should stay there, we are going to be much more, you know, because then you're fixing my problem than going out and say, no, we have to, if you work in a government and there are other rules that applies to that. where you have to apply and, you know, all those things. But a lot of these other jobs are a bit under the radar. Mm. So I remember, you know, when I started, I'd done a lot of networking in my life, and it was very interesting to me to see that if people came to me networking, the only time was when they were looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't networking. That was looking for a job. So the ones that actually came there and said, "So Lee, you know, what can I help you with? What's, you know, what goes around comes around," and we would have an interesting conversation and, you know, help me understand. And then of course I would ask, "So what about work?" And you would say, "Well, I'm looking for a new job," or something like that. But this is, from that perspective, I think, especially if you're new in Sweden, you know, there might be, the outcome might be a job somewhere along the line, but don't forget the fun in networking.
Mm.
You know, getting to know a new culture, new people.
You can get friends.
Yes, even that.
Mm. Life is not only about work.
Not only. And you know, as you said, the work market is important to us. That's a very good place to meet people. And I think this is where I want to talk about the art of networking a little bit, because I think, you know, if you look at it, if you take a normal Swede, the normal Swede has parents, friends, they grow up, they probably stayed in the same place. We're not that mobile when it comes to moving around the country. If you're an academic, you probably move to one of the big cities to get the interesting jobs. But, you know, this is what we do. And then we also have the situation where you are getting into a job and you're staying there for a long time. So yes, we are doing that as Swedes. However, you know, if you think about people coming from other countries, you have to learn to understand that you need to break. I mean, we talked about that. Where do you find the Swedes? Mm. You know, because we close a little bit, because we have all the friends and all the things we need. And then we add friends from daycare, or, you know, our kids, mothers and fathers get into our network, and some people we like on a work market along, or, you know, colleagues. So you have to tap into all of those. You have to find a reason to have a fika with someone in the same daycare as you have, or, you know, if there is sport somewhere. We have to find those places, because we are not naturally social. We will not go to cafes and talk about philosophy. That's a bit weird for us, because we, as you say, we're very work driven. So I know this is a problem, but then again, I think that a tip is actually to say that, because Swedes are very helpful people. When someone asks us for help, we are willing to help.
And there are several organizations really who help international newcomers to Sweden to find a friend, to dine together, do things.
Do all of those things.
Exactly.
Because if you do that, you start somewhere. Because you don't have the family, friends and everyone you grew up with. So you have to start somewhere.
Mm.
And as you say, you know, having one of those fika with a Swede, I mean, that's great, because then you talk about that and it comes, oh, do you work there? I have a friend who works there. You should probably have a... So yes, we do actually help,
mm-hmm.
but we are not going to... We need a little bit of help in the boxing.
Yeah, go, you know, to things you already know. Maybe you can go to a sports club or to a mosque or to a church or to... Yeah, something you're familiar with from home to start. That's always a good idea.
And then you say... This is why this is good. You know, I have homework or part of me coming here, I've decided I need to have a fika with three Swedes. Would you like to be one of them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it so that, because we need to have a reason.
Mm.
Lunch is very good, sure. Because then we feel comfortable. You know, it's not something weird. We're just going to have lunch. We don't have to have a reason. But so that, I think that we are very rational, like we talked about before, to survive the weather.
And I think one important message to international people in Sweden is that you are so needed here.
Mm. Oh,
Sweden
yes.
is one of the countries, as all countries in Europe have an older and older population. So all European countries need more people coming in. So you are so, so welcome here. So I think maybe you don't feel very welcome when you're here or needed, because you're completely out of everything. But you are needed, and Sweden needs all these people coming here to work.
And Maria, I mean, that's why I like to work with you, because this is so important. Mm. We can't afford not to look after the people that come here, because
Absolutely.
We need them in the workplace. We don't have enough people to go around, enough educated people to do this that we need to do to continue being a prosperous country. So yes, and somewhere I think there is a communication problem, because we can hear that employers are saying, oh, you know, we are screaming for workforce and we need those really skilled ones, so we can't find them. And it's like, well, they're here. What's the problem?
Mm.
If in a bad day I say that they're just trying to make the ones that already work really hard with no assistance, with no people looking, helping them to actually work, you know, manage to do that for another 6 months because it's expensive to hire people. That's my conspiracy theory. No, but I think part of it is because some of us, we work so hard. We can't even lift, you know, the head and say, okay, are there people around that could actually do something for us? So what I would like to do is don't be worried about taking like a praktik or an internship if you can afford it, because that means that you can get a foot in the door and you can keep the foot there for a month. And then you have the possibility to really show what you're about.
Yes, and there are also different solutions, this like Jobbsprånget and Korta Väg and other initiatives that helps you get into the job market. We can put that in the information too.
So I've heard you talk about being able to communicate sort of your skill set and the problems that you can solve within an organization, the importance of networking, the sort of the historical backdrop to how the labor market or whatever term we want to call it functions. What are some practical tips you have to enter the labor market?
I mean, and I'm directing this to people with a degree. I mean, an academic. Well, a common mistake is to think that you can get an easy job. Like I can work for the local grocery store, or I could, but you can't, because you're always going to hear that you're overqualified, and that's probably true, especially if you think that could be a way to support yourself. I've been in sales most of my life, and unfortunately, when you ask this question, I need to tell myself the same thing as I do when I work with sales: get back to basics.
Mm.
Yeah,
this is about, unfortunately, networking, getting to know Swedes, getting your foot in the door, finding, you know, a reason to be there, getting an internship. And while you are there, you go to lunch with all the Swedes that work there, or all the people that work there. You actually become part of their brains, so they can look out for you. And of course, you should be applying for jobs. We had this discussion last week. Should they actually call the person that are in the ad? Of course you should. And this is going to sound a bit harsh, but the difference between you coming to Sweden together with a spouse or something that has an employment, you need to tap that, because that is, okay, this sounds hard. We have had a lot of immigrants coming to Sweden, and you do not want to be tangled up in that group. I'm sorry.
Mm.
You will have to make sure that you are, because you're privileged to be here. You are here by choice. You are here because you have you already have one foot in the workplace. And by calling them and saying, you know, demonstrating your story, I'm new to Sweden, I'm here together with, we relocated, that makes you an expat, or whatever we call them when they come here, rather than someone who didn't want to go here, that is a refugee, someone who, because there are a lot of academics coming and they end up, driving a taxi if they're lucky.
Mm.
So I'm sorry. It's hard work, but you should always give them a call and state that in a nice way, saying, you know, I'm new to Sweden. I'm keen to find out more. I'd love to have this chance to show, you know, what I can do. And I understand if, you know, maybe there's an internship that I can start with or something.
Mm.
And this is also part of how the unemployment agency work, that they are maybe not as good at sending people to the right jobs.
Mm.
So I think that we have, with a strange name coming from a strange country or from another country, there are employers that are just going to put those aside.
How important is it to learn Swedish, you think?
I was going to say not at all, but that's not fair. To get your foot in the door, you don't have to. If you, because these people have a degree somewhere. they are looking to companies where English is probably going to be the company language.
Yeah, but still, the job ad for that job can be in Swedish.
I'm not looking for a job ad. I'm building my network to get the job that way.
Yes.
And you can have someone translate that for you and you say, oh, this is, you should probably go and look for this. But I don't think you should make that. I mean, I've had that situation where people say, I'm only at, you know, Swedish C level. I need to be at D level before I, you know. And the thing is, if I'm the employer, I'm going to sit down and have a chat with you. And if Swedish is important, it doesn't matter if you're on C or D level. I'm going to hear if you can get the job done or not where you are. But it's probably going to be English. And if you have the right expertise, as you guys have, that should not be a problem.
No.
But for your own sake, because it's fun, get into the culture, learn Swedish, see it as an adventure. You know, make sure you go about networking because you want to understand society, make friends, put the fun back into being social, and on. Probably going to see that will give you more opportunities than not. And of course, do all the normal channels as well if you have them. But don't wait for a job to land in your lap.
Mm.
Lee, so happy to have you here. Interesting to hear what you have to say about this because you really have a long experience and a somewhat different perspective than many other people do. So thank you so much from us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Now, Philip, what's your biggest takeaway?
I think for me, it was Lee's networking tips, quite inspiring to think about networking, not simply from a transactional perspective, because it's daunting to walk into a room and honestly dehumanizing to see people as sort of ways or means to an end. So thinking about it as a fun opportunity to get to know people, because you also don't know sort of the way you could help others as well,
exactly.
And a friendship that could form.
Yeah, I agree. I also like people and I always try to be helpful, but it's always inspiring also to hear someone else talk about it. And I also think it's good to be reminded of actually how different the Swedish labor market is from many other countries.
Yeah.
For example, you get the trust as an employee and all the benefits you get through your job.
Exactly. And in Sweden, there actually are many sort of semi-organized ways to network. So especially if you're a newcomer in Sweden. So I really recommend to check out the episode description to look at all the different links that we've talked about today. And of course, if you like what you hear, please follow us. And then you can hear about our future episodes. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Thank you. And this podcast is produced by Stockholm's Akademiska Forum.
Hey, Stockholm is a state of mind. Yeah, we break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast.